This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Federal prosecutions of January 6th rioters continue as participants in the deadly action at the Capitol face prosecutions and convictions. A House panel investigating the attack is also reportedly readying a charge of criminal contempt against Donald Trump's former advisor, Steve Bannon, over his refusal to comply with a subpoena over the probe. But strong as the response to the January 6th riot sounds, there has been little attention paid to a non-participant on the other side of the political spectrum who has received a harsher sentence than most rioters for doing little other than exercising his First Amendment rights. Daniel Baker, a self-described anarchist based in Florida, has been sentenced to 44 months in federal prison for calling for armed self-defense against gun-toting white supremacists. My guest is Natasha Leonard, columnist for The Intercept. Her work has appeared in The Nation, Book Forum, and The New York Times, among others. She teaches critical journalism at the New School for Social Research in New York, and she's the author of Being Numerous, Essays on Non-Fascist Life. She joins me now to discuss her latest article in The Intercept entitled, A Florida Anarchist Will Spend Years in Prison for Online Posts Prompted by the January 6th Riot. Welcome to the program, Natasha.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about the fact that this person seemingly did absolutely nothing other than speak. He didn't go to Washington, D.C. on January 6th. So who is Daniel Baker and what is he actually accused of doing?
Right. So Daniel Baker is a Florida-based anarchist, as you say, also a yoga teacher, a practicing Hare Krishna, and is very involved in local community mutual aid down in Tallahassee. He was arrested just over a week after the January 6th riots. There was an FBI raid on his home because following January the 6th, he had taken to social media, particularly Facebook, and put out these, you know, really quite bellicose, I will say, and somewhat reckless given the political climate, calls to arms. But they were very, very general, not aimed at specific individuals, not, you know, planning any sort of specific January 6th counter events with any sort of timing, any sort of meetup points. But the idea was, as many people feared, including the FBI itself, that far-right groups, mobs, and militiae around the country would storm local state houses around Joe Biden's inauguration in sort of a swarm of follow-up copycat mini January the 6th. So Baker, who is on the left and very much has committed much of his life to countering far-right white supremacist ideologies and organizing, put out this call to say, no, you know, we should defend against these white supremacist mobs should they amass again. You know, we did not in fact see huge follow-ups to January 6th, in large part because there was a lot of, you know, formal law enforcement backup bought into local state houses. But certainly Baker's concern about more January 6th to come were not in and of themselves rare. In fact, they were common. But he was charged and then convicted of sending interstate threats by virtue of making these kind of very vague, although quite aggressive, online statements. I don't think there's a reasonable way that these statements, however reckless they were, could be read as genuine threats worthy of 44 months in prison. Consider the fact, as I mentioned in my article, that a man from Georgia who had driven across state lines with guns and ammo in tow to attend January 6th had missed the riot because of car trouble, but was sending texts saying, I'm going to shoot Nancy Pelosi in the head, and had in fact traveled across state lines with guns, received a considerably shorter sentence for the same charge, interstate threats. You know, Baker did not in fact name anyone as a target, never attended any sort of event, did not go towards the Tallahassee State House with a gun, did not in fact gather individuals together in some sort of anti-fascist group. So just as a point of law, these this unequal false equivalence and in fact further persecution of the left wing anti-fascist protester who did not in fact even attend a protest is notable. And you know, that's not even to speak of the fact that our judicial system would of course not consider that there should be no moral equivalence drawn between fascist organizing and the anti-fascists who might want to organize against them, for example, Baker.
Right. I mean, it's quite remarkable that we see, especially during the Trump years, so many white supremacists so openly calling for things like armed self-defense, really skirting the line around incitement of violence, even before the January 6th riot, you know, something that might have been far worse than what Daniel Baker called for would have been shrugged off and accepted as, well, it's their Second Amendment right, right?
Yeah, I mean, it should have been a pretty straightforward First Amendment protected case. And as you say, yes, it's hardly rare that on from the far right, we see constant overtures online to armed overturning of the Biden result, to armed revolution, you know, in defense of white standing. It's very, very common, you know, and Baker's, I actually, you know, I personally don't have a problem with physically confronting fascists. And I've written at length about why that's often, in fact, a kind of a well-informed and philosophically well-informed approach to fascist mobs and fascist organizing, actual physical confrontation. But more to the point in terms of Baker's case, whether I think there are moral justifications for physically confronting fascists or not, it shouldn't even matter, because no such confrontations took place. All Baker was doing was, as you say, engaging in what should be protected speech. This was by no reasonable standard could be understood as a direct threat. No given person was threatened.
No.
And there were no actions taken. But what was interesting about Baker's trial is the prosecution made much of his political organizing as an anarchist, and that he considers himself an anarchist. And of course, we have a long history of the political persecution of anarchists, you know, from the Haymarket Massacre onwards, up until today, with a prisoner like Daniel Baker, another incarcerated anarchist, Eric King, comes to mind. And so, you know, the fact that he was an anarchist was made much of. The fact that he owned firearms, too, owned them, prior to any of these kind of Facebook posts were sent, was made much of too. And the fact that he had ordered a new firearm. But it's worth keeping in mind, firearm sales in this country went up 80% after January 6th. So clearly it was not necessarily a sign of a plan to go and attack far-right individuals with these firearms by ordering them, because firearm sales were up per se. It just should have not been dispositive of anything in the trial. They also tried to demonize Daniel Baker by virtue of the fact that he had been in the US military as a young man, as a late teen, and then went AWOL because he did not want to go overseas and participate in the US's brutal wars on terror. He did not want to massacre people overseas in the name of US imperialism. So he abandoned the US military and was given a less than honorable discharge, other than honorable discharge. Later, he did then spend his own personal money to join the incredibly interesting, exciting, and important, I believe, political project in Syria of Rojava, the Kurdish feminist eco-socialist movement that has been and was, with US support, fighting ISIS. So Baker joins this you know, political revolution that has been compared to the international brigades that fought against, that went to fight against Franco's fascists in the Spanish Civil War, you know, these storied internationalists that are so celebrated now. Rojava has been, the international involvement in Rojava has been compared to that, but at trial was used against Baker to say he was a, you know, violence-seeking would-be terrorist, even though the US military, in fact, put their support behind the Rojava YPG fighters against ISIS. So there was just a lot of myth-making and kind of conjuring of left-wing threat and threat of violence that Daniel, who is, you know, a traumatized, huge-hearted, formerly unhoused veteran, you know, was just completely misrepresented and demonized. It's hard to not see the clear political bent of the prosecution and the judge agreeing with it, a very right-wing judge. His arrest 9 days after January 6th, the prosecutor made much of the fact that, you know, they would be going after terror threats, quote unquote, on both sides. So it's more of that classic false equivalency, trying to demonize the left and condone the far right that so defined the Trump presidency, but is also far bigger than the Trump presidency and remains the case under Biden.
So 9 days after the January 6th riot, he gets arrested. So this is still technically during the Trump presidency, but then he's prosecuted by the federal government, by basically the Biden administration, right?
Right. So it was because it was an interstate charge, because his posts were on social media, so, you know, the internet goes across states. The prosecution and the trial itself and the conviction all took place under Biden. And, you know, it can be said that the Biden administration has done somewhat better at censoring the problem of the far right, naming it as a specific extremist threat in a way that the Trump presidency certainly didn't. You know, who could forget the very fine people comment that Trump made about neo-Nazis. But, you know, it's a long, long history that predates Trump of demonizing the far left, insisting on a two-sidesism around the threat of the far left and the far right. It's a right-wing tendency, but it's one very much embraced by liberals. So I'm not surprised that and I would expect to see more of this still under Biden. I didn't expect that to be a huge sea change. And it's also worth noting the state of the judiciary. So the judge that sentenced Baker so highly was a Trump appointee that 200 human rights, civil rights groups in a coalition wrote against his appointment at the time of his appointment. So, you know, the judge going hard on Baker should not be a huge surprise in a conservative jurisdiction.
So this is a man who was held for, you point out, 10 grueling months during his trial, 7 of which were in solitary confinement. And now he's sentenced to 44 months in prison. It seems as though he has been, he's being made a scapegoat of. Did you get a chance to communicate with him in writing about his story? I mean, I really haven't seen the story anywhere else.
Yes. So I was one of his friends who was part of his support committee, actually reached out to me to let me know about the story. So then I looked into it, and some articles were written at the time of his arrest, at the time of the FBI raid. And there was a good piece in Jacobin, actually, that pointed out that his prosecution is, or, you know, already evidence come to fruition that we don't want the kind of rubric of counter-terror to be totally embraced by the government as if that's the way we're going to kill white supremacy in this country, by embracing a state apparatus counter-terror program that, of course, inevitably will, cause further harm for the left and for Black liberation struggle and other kind of social justice movements that aren't white supremacists, such as the history of state counter-terror. So that was noted at the time of his arrest, but then really nothing was said about him aside from in hyper-local press And then when his sentencing was coming up, and then, you know, we discovered how much longer it would be than a lot of the what one could call charge-wise comparable January 6th cases, it seemed worth drawing attention to. So I had been in touch with his support committee and his attorneys, and then also spoke to him a number of times on the phone. He was allowed 50-minute calls from federal prison and via the kind of prison email system calling. So we did, we were in pretty regular contact while I was reporting the story. And he told me some pretty harrowing things that are also part of a lawsuit he has filed against the Bureau of Prisons for his treatment. For example, when he was held in solitary in the special housing unit SHU, he was cycled around cells that would consistently be covered in feces because an incarcerated person next to him, a gentleman, had been held for 2 years, considered mentally unfit for trial, had clear, severe mental illness. Baker later found out by contacting the man's family that he was autistic and that the prison was not making accommodations for that in any way. So this you know, very, very disturbed man was, you know, covering his cell with feces and throwing his feces. And this was where Baker was placed during months of solitary confinement, again, for writing emails. And to be clear, I believe in prison abolition per se. It's not that I think, you know, only the January 6th people should go to prison and otherwise, you know, prisons are great aside from when it's for leftists. Like, obviously, incarceration is the problem here. But it is particularly striking given what Baker was charged for and convicted of.
Do you know if there's any efforts around a support group or a campaign for Baker or appealing his sentencing or anything that, you know, people who are listening to this, watching this interview might be feeling outraged and want to rally in support of him?
So he will be appealing his conviction, and that will be, you know, happening, that he will be starting to seek appeal immediately. There's not a specific fund, but if you look for Daniel Baker Tallahassee on Twitter, you will see that there are various links to his book wish list he wants to be reading while he's incarcerated, and you can send books to him via that wish list. You can do it in a way that accords with prison regulations around books received and whatnot. But yeah, there's not a specific fund right now, but I'm sure if you keep an eye on Daniel Baker Tallahassee, if you're on Twitter, and I will be keeping people abreast of what happens in the case and the appeal going forward.
Again, thank you so much, Natasha. We'll post a link to your article from our website, risingupwithsonali.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
My guest has been Natasha Leonard. She is a columnist for The Intercept, author of Being, numerous essays on non-fascist life. That article I referred to is entitled "A Florida Anarchist Will Spend Years in Prison for Online Posts Prompted by the January 6th Riot." I'm Sonali Kohatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.